Welcome to this Walnut Wednesday edition of the Maya Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. We'll have feature agricultural news reports coming up in the show, along with a look at regional and national agricultural news. And I'll get started with that regional agricultural news right after this.
AgroPlante is the leading manufacturer in specialty products. AgroPlante formulates products that rise to the challenge of today's growing conditions. Saline and sodic soils reduce crop yield and cause significant crop losses. AgroPlante developed Cation EX5 Plus with growers in mind to manage soil salinity. With multiple years of research, Cation EX5 Plus has proven to be an excellent source of calcium and an effective soil salinity manager. Run it through drip irrigation without any issues. Simplify your application method with innovative and efficient formulations. Alleviate salinity stress with Cation EX5 Plus. AgroPlante, imagination, innovation, science in action.
The 21st United Ag Health's Community Challenge at Toro Park in Salinas, California has been canceled. The event will be rescheduled for later this fall. It is being canceled due to the rain and flooding that the community has endured over the last couple of months, according to event organizers. Measure to Improve, an equitable food initiative, partner for the first time on a pilot program, bringing a new approach to building organizational capacity, improving waste management practices, and reducing greenhouse gas emissions to three California agricultural facilities. The produce and reuse pilot program success is attributed to the open collaboration between MTI, EFI, and three participating companies, which are Misonero, Good Farms, and Winset Farms. MTI and EFI worked to establish program goals and developed an approach around the idea that the success of an organization-wide waste reduction program depends on the engagement of the entire workforce to effectively implement changes. As a result, the three companies established strong green teams from multiple departments, engaged in hands-on training, developed company-wide systems, and implemented waste reduction plans. Although each company represented different types of produce suppliers, they shared best practices. This program now has enabled MTI and EFI to create a case study and blueprint for other like-minded companies to achieve similar success. This three-year project provided significant results. 50 employees were trained directly on this pilot project. However, the indirect number of trainees is more than 2,500 due to the commitment and culture created within these companies. The total commitment resulted in more than 144 tons of waste being diverted from landfills and a reduction of 435 tons of CO2. MTI and EFI see the success of the program as a positive example and model for other companies in the fresh produce industry and are hopeful it will have larger impacts beyond the pilot. The case study developed from the commitment of these companies is now available to be shared with like-minded produce companies committed to waste reduction in their operations. For more information, log on to measuretoimproveLLC.com. Since 2000, total domestic production of oranges has dropped 80% from 300 million boxes to a projected 62 million in 2023. Like oranges, grapefruit have seen a continuous drop in domestic production heavily linked to weather and disease factors affecting Florida. Since 2000, domestic grapefruit production has dropped from 67 million boxes to 8 million boxes. That is an 88% decline. Citrus fruits not as commonly grown in Florida have not faced the same domestic output declines. Lemon production, exclusive to California and Arizona, has hovered between 20 million and 30 million boxes since the 1980s. After a prolonged gap, organic table grapes should hit the market again in late May, and promotable supplies from both California's Coachella Valley and Mexico's Sonoran Desert will be available in June. Mid to late spring is always a difficult time to source organic table grapes, as South America's winter production is limited and tends to run out of supplies in April. This year's gap is even larger than usual, as cool weather has prolonged a spring grape crop that is running considerably late. It looks like they will start with organic reds from Coachella sometime during the week of May 22nd, according to John Harley of Anthony Vineyards. The crop is coming, but it's coming slowly, he says. Like many other California crops this year, including stone fruits and many vegetable commodities, rain and cold weather has delayed production. They're running a week to 10 days later than normal, according to Harley. Unfortunately, in terms of promotable supplies, they are going to miss the Memorial Day weekend. The good news is they will have plenty of organic grapes for the 4th of July, and there will be promotional opportunities by mid-June. Organic red grapes typically start about a week earlier than organic greens in a Coachella Valley, but this year the gap between the colors will be much shorter than usual, if it exists at all. At this point, the organic greens seem to be coming on quicker than the reds, he says. We'll see if that holds up as it gets closer to the start date. Once organic grapes start coming, Anthony Vineyards, which is headquartered in Bakersfield, is expecting more California organic volume from Coachella than last year. They have increased their acreage and have a very good crop this year, according to Harley. And there should not be a gap between the company's volume from Coachella and the start of its organic production from the San Joaquin Valley in the summer. He says they should be harvesting organic grapes in Coachella through July 15th, and they have increased their volume in the newer, later varieties, such as Autumn Crisp. He says they also have some of the earliest vineyards in the San Joaquin Valley, as they have vineyards in the southern end of the valley. True to this year's pattern, Harley says those San Joaquin Valley grapes will hit the market about 10 days later than in 2022. Last year, they started in the South Valley on June 20th. This year, it looks like they're going to start around the 1st of July. Napa Resilience, Innovation, Sustainability, and Empowerment is a six-event symposium organized around the six pillars of sustainable wine-growing leadership held each spring in the Napa Valley. This spring, one session in particular looked at the ways that the Napa wine industry could become more inclusive. When most people think of sustainability, protecting the environment comes immediately to mind. However, another part of sustainability is the social side, and it focuses on employees and a community and is often overlooked. Yet, at a recent Napa Rise seminar, speakers emphasized that this aspect of sustainability is the most essential. It's an uncomfortable topic to discuss, according to keynote speaker Maryam Alhamed, CEO of Maryam Plus Company and co-founder of the Diversity in Wine Leadership Forum. She says, however, this aspect of sustainability, which focuses on social justice, diversity, and inclusion, is the most important part. Napa Rise co-founder and seminar speaker Martin Reyes, MW, added, no other pillar in Rise has justice or fairness as such an overt part of its essential tenets. When they consider social sustainability, they deal with people, and that comes with the eggshells. They led a session that highlighted five steps that wineries and wine-related businesses could take towards a more inclusive Napa wine industry. And even though some people are nervous about making mistakes, most speakers urge that wine businesses just get started. The beginning of the seminar addressed the need for wine executives to step forward and address the diversity, equity, and inclusion issues in their companies. Todd Mastero, Director of Viticulture and Winemaking at Dominguez Estate in Napa Valley, compared the need to promote diversity in the workplace to that of promoting biodiversity in a vineyard. He explained how leaders could set justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion goals in their wine businesses. More and more wine businesses are incorporating diversity training into their strategy. For example, Charles Krug offers inclusive leadership and unconscious bias training. Both empower employees to act and lead in uncomfortable situations with expanded confidence and empathy.
Some citrus growers, as well as district water managers, have been showing concerns about the accuracy of satellite information for determining evapotranspiration of crops. Large discrepancies are being noticed, and it's causing issues for estimating the amount of water citrus trees and other subtropical crops will need. UC Davis, UCANR, UC Santa Barbara, and Land IQ are all participating in research funded by the Citrus Research Board for the citrus industry to determine a solution to this, which UC Davis irrigation specialist Daniele Zaccaria is a part of.
Citrus, avocado, also here in California, olive is considered subtropical crops. They have a specific feature. They are temperatures, very, very sensitive to temperature, to a hot temperature. So what it means is that when the air temperature rises up around 75 to 80 degrees, those crops enter kind of a protection state that entails closing their pores, their stomata, in order to avoid dehydration. In regard to their water behavior, these crops are somehow showing increasing sensitivity to temperature, especially during the drought period and during the heat waves. those crops are reacting, sometimes overreacting to the heat spell. Now, what it means in regard to satellite remote sensing, in California, satellites, mostly Landsat family satellites, overpass around 9:30 in the morning during spring and summer. And at that time, the satellite take a snapshot picture in, you know, capturing different wavelength reflectance. Now, the satellite remote sensing models and tools are either based on reflectance-based Krog coefficient or temperature-based Krog coefficient. Now, in 9:30 in the morning, first of all, most of the crops are highly transpiring, and so highly imbalanced with their surrounding air and atmosphere. The subtropical crops are probably at that time show already a stomata closure, and so their temperature, their canopy temperature, is higher than the air most of the summer days. So from that snapshot at 9:30, most of the satellite remote sensing model infer a daily evapotranspiration without adjustment, unfortunately. And this daily evapotranspiration show really large discrepancy to the actual evapotranspiration that is measured with micrometeorological measurements. So ground-based measurement with eddy covariance and surface renewal that normally we do on commercial production orchard are already showing large discrepancies in evapotranspiration with respect to satellite ET estimate. So there's multiple sources of uncertainties on satellite remote sensing. The first one is the time of the day for satellite overpass. The second one is the infrequent satellite overpass. So Landsat normally overpass every 7 or 8 days. So if an error occur on a daily ET, then you carry forward that error for at least 8 days. And there is also another source of inaccuracy, that is the interpolation of whatever happens in between those 8 days. If the sky is clear, if there's clouds, you have to jump ahead for 15 or 16 days. So there are multiple sources of uncertainties that make satellite remote sensing estimate potentially very inaccurate on subtropical crops. And those inaccuracies and uncertainties are now highly noted by orchard manager, growers, water manager, with respect to the records and metering of applied water. So water district, for instance, they sometimes meter all their deliveries to growers in their, you know, in comparing ET estimate from satellite remote sensing versus the meter records shows large inaccuracy. So as a result, there's a increasing concern on getting additional information on the level of accuracy of satellite against ground-based ET measurement that normally we do for research.
Clearly, inaccurate evapotranspiration estimations can have economic implications for the citrus grower using satellite imagery to determine these, and this research is looking to determine quantitatively what that actually looks like. From the perspective of district water managers, estimating too much water use or too little in production areas, where basins are already overdrafted, is detrimental.
If you estimate too much water, then your sustainable acreage with respect to groundwater supply is going to be smaller than, you know, the real one. If you estimate too little water, your sustainable acreage evaluation is going to be, you know, much wider than you can actually sustain with the water supply. Now, consider that in most of the citrus production area, water district and growers, they do a kind of a conjunctive use between groundwater and surface water. But surface water is becoming increasingly unreliable because of the weather variability between one year and the other. So imagine the last 3 years have been severe, increasingly severe drought, and this year we have floods. And so you never know how to plan for the future because there's a high uncertainties on what next water year is going to be. And so groundwater supply represent an insurance policy for a lot of producers. But again, the environmental regulation, the SGMA regulation, is now stating that the groundwater has to come to a sustainable use. I mean, the recharge has to be larger or equal than the safe extraction. So now the economic implication of inaccuracy, I think, is pretty large now, and the risk of economic impact of inaccurate ET, it's substantial.
A survey will be available soon from the researchers asking citrus growers who currently employ satellite imagery in their irrigation decision-making to provide perspectives on inaccuracies they've experienced.
If growers, farm manager, and water manager have a sense of the level of inaccuracy and errors that might come from satellite remote sensing of ET, and on top of that, what is the accuracy or inaccuracy they can consider acceptable for water resources planning and for water allocation, water delivery? This piece of information is being unclear in the last 5 to 10 years. So what do you consider acceptable? 5%, 10%, 20%, and of course this is a plus and minus in this watertight situation. The situation of the San Joaquin Valley and the Central Valley and the Low Desert is becoming tighter and tighter because of increasingly stringent environmental regulation. And so we want to survey stakeholder and say, are you aware of the current level of inaccuracy of satellite remote sensing, and what do you consider an acceptable level of accuracy for your operation? Either they operate an orchard, or they operate a water district, or they operate multiple farms and ranches. This is the main goal of the survey.
You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Charlstrom.
This segment was sponsored by Polymer Ag, makers of Anti-Stress 550, the climate stress solution. Find out more at polymerag.com.
The consumer price index rose again in April, but grocery store prices for food declined. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reported that the consumer price index for all urban consumers rose 0.4% in April. The overall food index was unchanged in April, as the food at home index fell 0.2% over the month, following a 0.3% decrease in March. Four of the six major grocery store food group indexes decreased over the month. The index for fruits and vegetables decreased 0.5% in April, and the index for meat, poultry, fish, and eggs declined 0.3%. The dairy and related products index decreased 0.7% in April, as the milk index fell 2%, the largest decline in that index since February of 2015. The non-alcoholic beverages index declined 0.1% over the month. In contrast, the index for other food at home rose 0.2% in April, following a 0.4% increase in the previous month. Citing the February toxic chemical derailment in Ohio, the U.S. Senate Commerce Committee has advanced a bill placing more safety requirements on railroads. The bill, the Bipartisan Rail Safety Act, would mandate railroads use safety detectors and at more frequent intervals than railroads now use voluntarily. Trains also would be required to slow down in urban areas when hauling hazardous materials and install better braking systems. Further, the bill broadens the list of chemicals that are classified as hazardous. The bill moved out of the committee on a 16-11 vote. Senator Maria Cantwell, a Democrat from Washington and chair of the committee, cited the act was drafted by a bipartisan group of senators from Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, and Missouri following the Burlington Northern derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, in February. Responding to the bill, the Association of American Railroads released a statement seeking more changes, but stating that the railroad industry wants to improve safety in the process. The AAR and its member railroads urge policymakers to continue refining the legislation to ensure the bill is focused on solution-driven policies that will measurably enhance safety. The American Farm Bureau Federation is asking the Department of Agriculture to move forward on a requested federal milk marketing order hearing. Farm News reporter Michael Clements shares more.
In a letter to the Department of Agriculture, the American Farm Bureau Federation asked the agency to hold a hearing on a proposal from the National Milk Producers Federation to modernize federal milk marketing orders and provide greater transparency for dairy farmers. Roger Cryan, AFBF chief economist, says the proposal includes changes supported by Farm Bureau.
The National Milk Producers Federation sent a letter into the USDA asking to have a hearing on federal milk marketing order pricing. They asked for some things, including adjustments to Class 1 differentials, modest increase in the processor's make allowance, updates to the component values that are embedded in the bottling milk price, and particularly they asked to go back to using the higher of the cheese milk or butter powder milk values for bottling milk. And we sent a letter to USDA asking them to go ahead and have a hearing on that request.
While AFBF supports the NMPF proposal, Cryan says Farm Bureau would like USDA to go even further to promote a pricing system fair to all dairy farmers.
One issue is on the make allowance. They're just asking for an increase. We think it's really important that any make allowance increase should be based on a survey of processors' costs, which should be mandatory and audited by USDA. In addition to the higher up, we have some other ideas that we'd like to add to the discussion in the hearing. And we'd also like to see increased milk check transparency so farmers know what they're getting.
If USDA moves forward with the hearing process, Cryan says it will take some time.
Within 30 days of National Milk's proposal, which they sent in a couple weeks ago, the department will have to put out some plan. They will likely ask for additional proposals. After that, they may have a pre-hearing listening session. So maybe a hearing would happen in July or August. And then they'll put out a recommended decision. Typically, they'll take comments on that before they put out a final decision that will then have to go to a vote of producers. A process like that, optimistically, it's 8 to 12 months.
Learn more at fb.org. Michael Clements, Washington.
Apples held the top spot for total fruit available for consumption in 2021 at more than 26 pounds a person after adjusting for losses. USDA's Economic Research Service's loss-adjusted food availability data adjusts food availability data for food spoilage, plant waste, and other losses to more closely approximate actual consumption. People in the United States consumed an average of 1.7 gallons of apple juice, roughly 9 pounds of fresh apples, and a total of 3.1 pounds of canned, dried, and frozen apples in 2021. Among the top seven consumed fruits in 2021, apples were the only fruit in which data were available for all five forms, which include fresh, canned, frozen, dried, and juice. Pineapples were the other canned option among these seven fruits for which data were available, while strawberries were the only other frozen fruit. Bananas, at 13.2 pounds a person, topped the list of the most popular fresh fruits, while orange juice at 1.9 gallons was the most popular fruit juice. Bipartisan legislation introduced by New Jersey Democrat Cory Booker and Iowa Republican Chuck Grassley in the Senate would change the Conservation Reserve Program. The Conservation Reserve Program Reform Act would prioritize enrolling marginal farmland in the CRP rather than prime farmland. The lawmakers say the legislation would generate more durable wildlife and environmental benefits while reducing competition for productive farmland between the Department of Agriculture and farmers, especially new and beginning farmers. The CRP Reform Act would set CRP's overall acreage cap at 24 million acres for fiscal year 2024 to 2028, with an emphasis on enrolling marginal land. The bill would increase incentives to enroll marginal farmland through the continuous enrollment and grasslands categories, while reducing the rental rate for general CRP signups by 10%.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.